in there. Jesus, how you doing, my man?
Lolo, Jake,
man,
long overdue.
100%. I think you're up there as one of my oldest OG crypto buddies, and like we've connected over the years in person. But somehow, yeah, you have not been able to grace the pod until today. So this is gonna be a fun one. Lots to talk about for sure. You got your hands in a bunch of stuff.
No. I'm just a humble businessman.
100%. And you just sit at home and you tweet. You got the Twitter fingers. But first question, seemingly innocuous, but actually kind of has a lot behind it, which is, what is a smart contract? Give us like a broad, high-level definition.
Yeah, so that is a great question because, again, depends on what your knowledge context is, what environment you're coming from. You have different contexts for that. I guess at this point, I would define a smart contract as a set of immutable instructions that lives on chain. I think that's probably the closest pure definition I'd have to the smart contract. It has to be a set of instructions, can't be changed. So once deployed, it's immutable. No one can change what this set of instructions should do. And it lives on chain. So there's no Oracle. There's no anything else that is handling the logic. What you see is what you get in terms of, you know, those set of instructions. Obviously, if you're, you know, reading those set of instructions in Solidity, it'll be significantly harder to read those set of instructions in Clarity, which is the Stack's smart contract language that I'm significantly more familiar with. But at this point, I would say the two properties that I would define a smart contract are public and on-chain and immutable.
Which that's a good definition.
Should be, yeah.
No, I like that. And that the reason I bring this up partially is because people will say things like Bitcoin doesn't have smart contracts, and I'm one of them. And I think part of it's a semantics debate at some level. But using your definition of a set of immutable instructions on chain, then that would mean that Bitcoin script does have smart contracts because it fulfills that definition. So how do you, for what's useful in 2024, how do you reconcile script smart contracts versus Clarity or Solidity smart contracts, or does it even matter?
I think right now, I think specifically Taproot makes it very easy to strawman that like they are smart contracts, right? I would say they're almost like one-shot executionable smart contracts though, which is like not traditionally what you think of, right? When you think of a smart contract, like on Clarity, anyone should be able to call this at any time, etc. Meanwhile, a Taproot output can only be spent once, and it lives within that UTXO. So there are definitely distinctions there, but you can make a pretty strong argument that like Taproot does enable smart contracts on chain. In terms of what are the differences? Well, the biggest difference is the one that I'm mentioning right now, which is the accessibility. Taproot smart contracts, which again, I would never call them that, but I think for the sake of this conversation, I have no problem doing so. They don't have global access. What does that mean? That means there is not a global property in which like you and I could check what is in all those different tap leaves. In fact, only the person who like made that would know what's in those tap leaves. And again, once you spend that UTXO, that smart contract is almost like you can't use it again, right? Meanwhile, Clarity, if you deploy a smart contract that is literally, you know, a contract that is literally a principle with an address that you can continuously query, right? So anyone can continue using that contract. Obviously, depending on what are the rules, whether it's like gated to certain addresses, etc. But that distinction of always available and globally available versus one-time use and locally available.
That's a good distinction. It starts to bring up things like why DeFi is hard on Bitcoin, even though,
right,
again, we both have smart contracts in this definition, but because you can't query the chain and say, you know, this wallet address is holding this much balance of blah, 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 and let me pull from that pool, it's not how Bitcoin works. So same wording, different radically different functionality because of the lowest level protocols.
Which is why you see indexers come into Bitcoin for everything, because they try to create that global wrapper layer, or that global layer by wrapping that around.
Yep, that makes sense. Okay, I want to that was a good, like, I think we'll use that later, especially with some of the stuff that you do as your day-to-day work. But real quick, and this is like, I know you pretty well, and like, you're probably one of the more, how would I word it? You're very deliberate, and you're a very locked in founder. Whenever I meet you are just super focused, very ambitious, very driven, but like, get shit done. And PG wrote this founder mode essay recently and kind of blew up Twitter. But you kind of fit that mold for me of like, who would I put in the dictionary for founder mode? Citrus might be in there.
Thanks.
So I want to just kind of like tease out, how do you think about like intention as a founder, or like mindset? Because I see a lot of founders try and they wrestle with these sort of things, and there's this kind of question of like intensity versus consistency, like going hard for a short amount of time versus doing it long term and not burning out. There's a bunch here, but I think from knowing you do it pretty well, so I'm just love for you to riff on this for a little bit.
Yeah, happy to. And this is definitely going to get very philosophical very, very quickly. I would say, the first thing is consistency over intensity. Consistency every day of the week. Just compounding effect. Like, I like, even with the 100 Days of Clarity course that I made, there's a very interesting effect where, like, you see people that start day one, and then you see the next thing you drop off to day two. And then you see who gets all the way to day 100. And it's such a small, small, small percentage of the people who can actually just show up consistently to things. And I'll put it this way, like, not easy, right? Like, I definitely don't enjoy living to such rigorous standards, which, like, you're one of the few people who knows, like, passive appearances. I'm extremely, extremely disciplined and routine. And I think what I've realized is it's only the people who are extremely disciplined and who are extremely disciplined who are actually free. And what I mean by that is it's very easy to succumb to your emotions at any moment in time. And I think it's only human. And so therefore, I think people end up making decisions and cascading down paths based on how they feel, which is at times right, and at times you should listen to your feelings, you should listen to your gut, that comes heavy into play. But if you're only doing what you feel like, and you're not doing what you actually want to do because you're succumbing to what you feel like doing, then you actually don't have that freedom. And so I've kind of like realized, like, huh, if there's anything that I want to do, I just start it as a habit, 5 minutes a day, 20 minutes a day, 30 minutes a day. And if you want to increase the likelihood of you sticking to something, you decrease the friction, you increase the UX, right? Make it shorter, give yourself more of a reward, et cetera, et cetera. And so now going back to, like, okay, cool, but why be this disciplined? Why do you care? My personal philosophy is I'm put on this earth to leave the best of my values behind through the things that I create. For the majority of my career, that's going to be products, that's going to be organization, that's going to be people that I mentor, that I help out. At one point, that's going to be my family. And I think for me, having that very clear why, has led to making the commitment on daily decisions very, very simple, right? Like, I wake up, I immediately am grateful, and I immediately think of, okay, why am I going to spend this way the way I'm spending it? Well, for myself, for my family, for my girlfriend, for my close friends, for the air outside, for the water, it's for whatever reasons you can find, right? Life's fucking hard. So whatever you can find to, like, be grateful about, do it. And so, yeah, that's having like that priority and like that mindset of, like, time is short, man. I want to leave the best of me behind. Just makes it really easy to commit to little things like, oh, work out 30 minutes. Like, you can't push yourself through 30 minutes. Like, that's, yeah, and I think just being intentional with time, man. Like, you and I are now at the age where we're no longer time billionaires, or time 100 millionaires, maybe time decimillionaires, but we're no longer time billionaires. And so that's something like I definitely keep in the forefront of my mind. And of course, that's hard as well. To be someone that's happy and grateful, but to keep it in front of your mind, like, hey, you're going to die. You're going to die relatively soon compared to like the history of like the humanity, right? And keeping those two in balance is something that tricky. But if you can nail that, like you're going to find a why every morning.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, and the freedom one is a big one that clicked for me over time. Is like,
yeah,
most people think of freedom as like options. Like I can go to the store and pick 1,000 things.
Yes.
But if your impulse control is so bad, you're actually not in control of, you can't stop eating the Snickers. So like, is that person really free? No, it's some kind of element of discipline and values and what you're trying to like deliver, put your time into. Then you choose it. And I remember I asked you forever ago, we were in your fancy ass apartment in Miami. And I think I asked something like, are you happy? And you just pushed back on that immediately. You were like, I don't really care about happiness. And I was like, what? What, bro? And you rephrased that as like, I'm fulfilled, or I want to be fulfilled. And it was like a simple reframe. So it's more things like that that just show like you're deliberate and like clarity of thought.
And that is, I'm happy to like riff on that too, because I think people way overadjust for happiness. And I think it's very easy to, one, confuse happiness with being content, confuse happiness with being distracted, confuse happiness with XYZ. And not only that, I think a fulfilled life, well, especially a life of an entrepreneur where you're by definition changing and changing yourself, you are not doing that unless you're cycling through all emotions. Like that is just straight up. If you are not going through painful growth periods, like I bet you are not growing at the capacity that you could. And if someone's always aiming to be happy, then they're going to always find a way to avoid not being happy or being uncomfortable.
Yep. No, that's good. That's good. Fuck, I love this topic so much, but I'm going to have to stop myself from going deeper down the rabbit hole. So you do a bunch of stuff, and I want to tease out as much as I can. There's probably like 4 episodes worth of content here, so I'll have to probably do a part 2 already. But for the people who don't know you super well, give us like the high level of the different things you've kind of had your hands in over the past year or two that you're currently kind of pushing on.
Sure. So I run Strata Labs, which you might hear Strata Labs or SetDev, which is the actual like DBA, which is a Bitcoin and Bitcoin L2 dev studio. And so most of our revenue, most of my work consists of doing client consulting work, sometimes auditing and security work, primarily in stacks, right? That is the ecosystem that we've been in for a long time. We feel very, very thankful for the opportunity that the community has given us. And, you know, we're continuing to execute in that ecosystem. The dev studio part, though, is we are rolling our own products with obviously the theme of Bitcoin and BitScript, the IDE and educational platform being the first one that we launched last year. We do have our second product, which I'm happy to tease out right now, but very simple. The thesis here is, we've told people to self-custody, but we haven't given them a tool to. And I think, and this is a thesis, I think that we need to decouple the management of private keys and seed phrases from a wallet. I think those two need to be decoupled. And I think if you look at password managers, it's a really good window into where I think we will go.
Excellent. So you got 3 things there. Strata Labs Dev Studio / Smart Contract Auditing, BitScript, which is education platform and tooling, make it easier to understand what's going on under the hood for Bitcoin script. But then, yeah, so the seed phrase thing, let's double click on that for a little bit, because it's simple when you hear about it. Everyone talks about self-custody. But then when it goes to managing your seed phrase, it goes on to paper, or it goes on to steel, and there's like not really a bunch of tooling for how to, and this is why I don't like creating new wallets across the ecosystems, because I have to then figure out a way to manage that thing. I mean, if my house burns down, this is going to be bad for me, because
Right.
my recovery method, not good enough. It's not, you know, it's not gonna pass the bar right now. So talk more over that. Like, what have you seen? Like, what first of all, what are the big pain points here that people just don't understand? Like, I kind of laid out some of, like, you have your
Yeah.
seed phrase and it's on you to store it, but that's, we're using primitive, you know, Neanderthal tech to save it. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think honestly the biggest, I think this is going to be a controversial idea one way or another, because the traditional advice that you tell people is do not store seed phrases or private keys on devices. However, revealed preferences versus stated preferences. How many people do you know that store at least one seed phrase on Notes app, in pictures, in Google Drive, et cetera, et cetera?
Yep.
I think there's room for at least one product to try to fill that category of, you know, get this, use it while you're waiting for your hardware wallet, or while you're figuring out like a more hard or like a more cold wallet solution. Or again, if you're a degen who you are quickly creating seed phrases across different wallets and you just need to organize yourself significantly more. And I will say, getting early feedback, one thing that's been very, very interesting to me, and I think there's going to be three segments of user types here. Something that I'm calling the investor Isaac. So non-technical people who like know enough to get to invest, but they think most of it is a scam and the only thing they want is to not lose it. What I find interesting is a lot of these folk have zero idea that like that seed phrases can work the way that they do, right? So one of my questions is, you know, did you know that with the seed phrase you can create wallets across not just Bitcoin but Ethereum, et cetera? And I would say, at least in the investor Isaac category, less than 10% of people are aware of that. As you move more into like, okay, let's the self custody nuts, they kind of are more aware of that. And then like degens are, some of them know that. But I think in general, the organization of seed phrases and then like the BIP derivations is very unexplored UX, and I think there's a lot to improve there. And actually, I'm not sure. Have you seen Ian Coleman's website for BIP39?
No,
I'm not sure
no.
if you can screen share, but I'm going to share like what's honestly a really big inspiration for Rootkey.
Yeah, drop it, and I will definitely. If you want to talk about it while you kind of like browse it, I
Here
can
it
do an
is.
overlay. I can do
Okay,
an
cool.
overlay while we play this.
Yeah, so if you open that link up, this basically helps you spin up a seed, and then if you scroll a little bit lower, you can see all the derivation paths. Of course, like it just says BIP32, BIP49, BIP84, you know, BIP141, which is not very useful in and of itself. But if you start reading the fields, you realize that there's a slot for purpose, there's a slot for a coin, and there's a slot for account. And so each seed phrase actually has like an entire address book of keys and wallets that people could be using. And again, that's not explored at all. The most is explored is that people use a wallet, they put in one seed phrase, and then that wallet, Bitcoin wallet, for example, just goes through like, okay, BIP44, index one, index two, index three. But people don't realize that their seed phrase already has all this other stuff built into it. And there's not really any UX for the normal person to look at it. This is kind of cool. This shows people who like understand what's happening. But translating this into an app that my mom can use would be an example. And actually, I want to talk about my mom for right now because she was actually a big motivation for why I'm building Rootkey. When Block Fi remember when FTX blew up, BlockFi was getting in trouble, and then remember that FTX bought them out, and like it ended up being a complete scam or whatever. But when they bought them out, my mom had money on BlockFi. And I remember thinking right there and then, like I was in New York or something for some reason, not with her. And she had like a Bitcoin. And I remember thinking to myself, fuck, like if something happens to BlockFi, you know, at that point I was like, oh, Sam just bought them out. Like of course they're going to be good. Hilarious in retrospect. But if anything happens, like to her, like I don't know to her BlockFi, like I'm not sure what I would do. And so I started thinking, like, all right. Like, what wallet can I use to just like send it to just send her an address right now? Because I don't want her to download another app. I don't want her to like you know, try deriving her own private keys and stuff. And that was one of the key moments where I was like, wow, if I just had like a device, just literally create a random seed and then just create an address that I could shoot it to her and just say, send your Bitcoin to this. You know, it's a self-custodied. I have everything. Like, it's basically offline because I've only made it on this local device and no one knows where it went. And obviously, I didn't do that. My mom did lose one Bitcoin. And that left, you know, I'd be lying if I said that I didn't leave a scar. And so that is like one of the motivations for building this as well. Because again, we tell people to self-custody. Like, this gives you the tools to actually generate something random, keep it offline. Like, and so it never connects to the internet, at least for now. There's no API calls and there's no network calls. Everything is done client, including the cryptography. So you can create new Bitcoin address that no one knows about and like will receive Bitcoin to it. And then obviously whenever you do want to spend it, you will have to go to like an actual wallet. But that part of like self-custodying with no fear in mind is something that, again, I wish I had a couple of years ago because I would have just spun that up for my mom.
Interesting. Yeah, it definitely seems like there's a huge, huge design space here. And it's like, it's very low level where like, there's like protocol devs and they're, you know, in the weeds doing what they're doing. And then there's like app developers and there's a whole kind of like in between. I guess we kind of invest in it when we talk about like infrastructure layers, but that's almost kind of like a services thing too. This is kind of in the middle. But yeah, it sounds like there's a lot that you could do here that's just almost like the use cases stuff to reveal themselves. It's like it's so TBD that you'll see more as you keep chugging on it.
Yeah, and again, I think the interesting part is the fact that this is controversial because I feel like a couple of years ago, this would have been shot straight down. But now that we've seen how people behave when we tell them to like secure their seed phrases, I think the timing is more right for it. I think a couple of years ago, it would have immediately been shot down in the Twitter space. I think now people are going to be a little bit more understanding of, okay, hold on. Like, yes, this is, like, it shouldn't be on device, but is this better than Google Sheet, a photograph, and notes? Yes, 100%.
Yeah, this goes back to the whole, like, perfect is the enemy of good thing. And right. As you said, like, perceived preferences where it's like, yeah, it's good if you can have your own seed phrase secured perfectly and it's offline and, you know, you're good to go there. But a lot of people are going to mess that up. And so we have things like, you know, people trying to use iCloud or Gmail or whatever. And because there's so much money in those things being secure, they're relatively secure for the average person. And then maybe just, you know, as dollar value increases, you can push in and be like, hey, bro, maybe sweep those funds. This is getting a little dangerous. Like, there's all kinds of UX stuff you can do there that just makes sense as we onboard, as everyone says, the next billion users.
Hopefully. Yep.
Yep. Very cool. Very cool. So that's called RootKey. That's the seed phrase thing they're working on. Very cool.
Seed phrase manager.
Love it. What about BitScript? Let's chat about BitScript. I mean, I'm really glad you're building this, first of all.
Thank you.
Because there's a huge gap in the market. And like, I've tried to code a few different times over the years. I'm kind of technical. I've taken your 100 days of Clarity code. You're probably one of the top educators in this space as far as being able to explain things simply and get people hands-on building as soon as possible, which I think is a very important thing for momentum.
Yeah, exactly.
And motivation, which I think you understand intimately because you're...
Yeah.
Yeah, and you... And again, like this is because I know you, but you're a self-taught programmer. Like you didn't go, you know, 4-year CS degree. You've just been reading docs and trying and failing and banging your head against the wall. And so, yeah, talk to me about BitScript and like kind of like trying to make it easier to learn and work with Bitcoin Script.
Yeah. So, I mean, BitScript was completely something that we built out of need. We needed it ourselves. I think there's one other website that is now trying to do a really good job in visual education for Bitcoin. But website-wise, learnmeabitcoin.com was like the only really, really solid website. And I would say, you know, shout out to that. It's like that was definitely the inspiration for BitScript. And so honestly, we can just be as useful to the community as learnmeatbitcoin.com has been. That would be a great spot for us.
Huge, huge. And then what's the, there's a couple of things that it does. It seems like you explain things. So there's like a go from zero to 0.5 and understand what's going on under the hood. And then there's also tooling,
right,
to understand actually what transactions are doing or breaking down a hex. Talk more about that side on the tooling side.
Yeah, so more on the tooling side, which I've gone back and forth on how my strategy played out here. But on the tooling end, we basically just realized, like, you know, Ethereum ecosystem and even Stacks has a decent amount of not just APIs, but really beautiful UX tools for anything, right? Like on Ethereum, you have the Remix IDE, or you have Tenderly.co. On Stacks, you know, Hero platform doing a pretty damn good job. But I realized, like, the Bitcoin space, just the Bitcoin, and I'm sure you talked about this a lot, but like, the Bitcoin space just did not pay attention to the design when it came to the development tools. And I feel like that is really where me and my team shine, is we have a really good eye for design, and we understand the technicals enough to try to simplify them through design more and more. So yeah, if you looked at both the script sandbox and the transaction deserializer, they're both advanced tools in that they let you either write script or deserialize transactions. But you could do the former on the CLI, and you could do the latter just using mempool. The reasons why you'd go to BitScript is specifically because they're geared towards showing the user what is happening here, what's happening underneath the hood, right? So the script sandbox, for example, has the stack to the right that shows you exactly what's happening as you're executing every step along, as you're executing along the left. And on the other side, with the transaction deserializer, again, if you wanted to see, if your question was what happened in this transaction, I'd tell you to go to mempool. If your question is how does this raw hexadecimal turn into what I'm seeing in that transaction, that's where you come to BitScript.
And just kind of reading your body language, it seems like the response has been less than you expected. Is that, like, has it been with actual, like, Bitcoin devs?
Yeah, so I'm happy to be very, you know, very blunt about the business here. So it's done well in terms of a product that people are using. And I would even venture to say a product that the right people are using, in that I've seen Bitcoiners who I deeply respect in the community reach out or, like, use the product or sign up, and, like, that's been very, very rewarding. My hesitancy on the body language that you're picking up is more so, I don't think it's a great business model. And that's something that, like, I've now had enough months in. And if we want to do it, if you were like, you know, doing a live like a VC call here, and you're like, all right, well, what went wrong? I think one, too early. The market is too small. Because even if you limit it to A, either developers that want to learn Bitcoin, or B, existing Bitcoin companies, like, the market for developers is just very small. Three, the form was wrong. And what do I mean by that? Developers are extremely sticky in their working environment. And at first, pitching it as an IDE, like we were going to get developers to go from where they're working to here, was just not enough of a promise for the feature set that we had. And again, developers are extremely sticky. You're not going to get them off VS Studio. You're not going to get them off Replit. Yeah, versus, like, again, going down the API route. I think if we would have gone down the API route for, like, one of the protocols or something like that, it'd be a better business, right? I don't think it'd help educate Bitcoin developers or help onboard Bitcoin developers, but it would have been a better business. So that's mainly what I would say that I've learned so far. It's a pain point. It's just not a strong enough of a pain point. Is what it seems like.
Got it. And the pool, it's interesting too, because especially over the years, I felt like, especially pre-ordinals, Bitcoin script felt very elitist is maybe the wrong word, but like it felt very like ivory tower-ish, where it's
Yeah.
like you're in a small, privileged elite class of developer that goes after the hardest problems because you just built like that, and everyone who's kind of like easier is going to Ethereum because you can code in JavaScript.
Yeah.
Ordinal seems to kind of like shifted that, where now a bunch of people are willing to deal with the frustration of it. But yeah, I wonder if that's part of the issue, is like part of it's this the mindset of traditional Bitcoin devs. They like and are okay with difficulty. But then second question that kind of comes to mind is like, given the way they're constructed, is there as much of a need for things like this for script versus expressivity contracts? Or yeah.
Yeah. Again, that's a great question, and kind of the conclusion that I'm coming to is, even if you can do a lot with scripts, sorry, even if you had a tool to do it, there's just not much that you can do. I will say, I think Taproot changes that, and we are working on a Taproot feature that allows you to like build stuff into a Taproot output. But I think in general, like right now, that these the statement of you can't do much with script is pretty accurate, unfortunately.
Yeah,
Pretty accurate.
and that's just because at the end of the day, it's really, UTXOs are locking and unlocking, and then you just do a bunch of fancy stuff behind that and how
And
you
just,
lock and unlock.
yeah, and I think just even like creating custom transactions is still very hard. Like, if you wanted to create a custom transaction, where do you go? Sparrow, maybe?
Yeah, and I've when I was learning, I was taking some of Lisa's classes on Udemy, Nifty Nye from Base
Shout out
58.
Lisa. Hell yeah.
Yeah, she's dope. And yeah, you kind of pick up things like she'll say things like, some developers do things by hand, meaning like paper and pen. And you're like, what the are you talking about? But that's
Yes.
just how it is.
Yes. And again,
So.
that's what we're trying to change. But yes, that's how it is. And fortunately and unfortunately, like, writing script hasn't been that rewarding. I think for the first time, we're seeing capital run in, and people are saying that they know script to raise money. So I'm hoping that there's now like a lot more, of an urgency for people to understand what is going on underneath the hood.
Okay, that's a good question, because there definitely is more money flowing in, and there's now a huge asymmetry of talent versus demand. And so one of the things I'm always curious about, if I could clone myself, a thing I would do is probably just do what you did with 100 Days of Clarity. I would just like document the shit out of my journey going from who I am right now to like proficient Bitcoin script dev and like build something somewhat hard. If I
Yeah.
had that time, I think that would people want a role model to kind of like show them first. And because so much developers are working on shit, it's hard to find time to teach and dev, for example.
Yeah.
So, question
I think
is,
Super Testnet does a really good job of that. Before your
he
question.
100% does, and his lessons are cheap. He'll charge like 5, $10, and he's a good teacher.
He's a phenomenal teacher.
So yeah, great resource. I'll add that below. Good fucking dude too. But yeah, because there's this asymmetry, and like for me, before I got into Bitcoin, I worked at a shitty job I hated. So there's someone out there that doesn't want to do what they've been doing, and maybe Bitcoin script is a path that they could learn, but it still seems. Go back to that elitist thing, it seems too far away, too difficult. So, like, as someone self-taught, maybe sell them on the vision, or like, how feasible is going from zero to hero in Bitcoin script in 2024?
Much easier than it was in 2023, that's for sure. Again, between BitScript, between Base58 stepping up, between learnmeabitcoin.com updating their website. And again, I know there's at least Bitcoin Illustrated is the other like dudes who are rolling out something educational as well. I'd say the path is now a lot more clear than before. I would say it's still not clear where the hiring opportunities are. I think you have the secret sauce on that, and I see your tweets a ton of time on X is looking for a TypeScript developer or Y is. But like, outside of that, I know there's demand for it, but I also don't know exactly where that demand is being communicated.
Yeah, well, that's actually a good point. It's not, that's the hard part, is that it's not happening on job boards for sure.
No.
Which is probably a big gap. It's a probably a big difficulty for newbies because you can't
Yeah.
see it. You don't know. You want to see a salary range and you want to see a job application. But the way it's happening is backdoor DMs, a couple GitHub posts or PR requests, and go, oh, that guy's been doing some dope shit. And then you just get sucked into somewhere. That's happening all the time. Anybody who's even remotely bubbling up as like somewhat valuable is getting spotted and sucked into companies pretty quickly. But it really is backdoor DMs, stuff like that, which makes it hard to discover.
It makes it hard to sink your teeth in. I think if most people, you tell them 3 to put your head down 4 to 6 months, we'll give you enough to just eat. But outside of this 4 to 6, out after those 4 to 6 months, you'll make 180 to 240.
Yep.
Yeah. Most people will absolutely hop at that, but there's definitely not that guarantee.
Yep. 100%. Okay. Damn, we breezed through a half hour already. Okay, let me find maybe one or two more questions, and then we can close this down for we'll have to do a round two. There's just a bunch here.
I'm so proud of you too, man. I remember when you were just starting out.
Dude. It's crazy. Sometimes I pause and I'm like, I'm sure you do this too, especially with like, you talk about like gratitude. Like, I just gotta pause and be like, damn. I open my
Consistency.
laptop and I'm just like, this is my fucking life right here. I'm not,
Consistency,
I'm
man.
100%. 100%. And that's the biggest thing, even with like the podcast. Like, people have come and gone and you just put out
Yeah.
consistent episodes because it doesn't work. Does its thing. Let's talk about Nakamoto. Let's talk about stacks. You've been doing a bunch of core work for it.
Yes.
Where how do I want to approach this? I guess let's start with the one that's kind of like everyone's talking about, which is like how big of an unlock is Nakamoto in your opinion? Like we've been in stacks for a few years.
Huge. Huge, huge, huge. I mean, just like the fast blocks feature is by far, the thing that everyone's sort of been waiting for. And like the one, again, the one really good pushback against using stacks in the first place is, the blocks are just as slow as Bitcoin blocks. Obviously there's a lot more upside, but like that was always a really good point of feedback that people would give. And obviously, like if you look at the other quote unquote L2, such as Rootstock or Lightning, they are very fast, and that's always been one of their biggest value props, right? So I think that is going to be a huge unlock, and I think obviously that paired with SBTC is going to be an insane unlock, because then again we are as competitive as either Lightning or Rootstock, because we're able to move pegged in Bitcoin in the matter of seconds.
Yep, love it. Yeah, SBTC is definitely one I'm shoot probably the most bullish on. I mean, fast blocks are good, but without a good peg mechanism, like it just feels like a crypto chain. But now that we're gonna have an enshrined bridge, it's just everything changes. So very excited for that. Okay, last
It's been
questions could
stressful.
be,
It's been stressful.
what's
I'll say
that?
that. It's been
To
stressful.
work to work on to work on core engineering stuff. Well, maybe that's a question because you've been doing application stuff, design stuff. Is this the hardest, like,
Yeah.
because
Yes.
you're doing lower level Rust, deep node, all the words. What's that been like?
Honestly, working in Stacks Core has been phenomenal. It's been a dream come true. And again, in all the good ways and all the bad ways that I like, in terms of like personal growth, right? So I would say the leadership engineers in Stacks Core are very serious and extremely competent engineers. For a few months, it was still that feeling of like any room I walked into, I knew I was the worst engineer in the group. Which is pretty wild, but like, yeah, I felt like that in a lot of the rooms. And the quality and the standards for everything are significantly higher than you would have, at least on your own team, which again makes sense. It's open source. You guys should hold yourself to higher standards. Coordination is harder, so the quality should go up, et cetera, et cetera. And Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed working in core. It is really tiring, I'll say that. And specifically Nakamoto, how many times it's been pushed back and how many pieces or how many parts are involved with Nakamoto. I understand why people are impatient, but man, it is extremely complicated. And a little funny anecdote, Stax Core is written in Rust. When I was first doing SBTC work, and then I got pulled in to do POX 4 work for Nakamoto. Which, like, I hear POX 4, I'm like, okay, cool, all Clarity. Like, I know how to write Clarity. No. If you want to work in any part of the stack in Stax Core, you have to know Rust. And I knew zero Rust when I started. And so ramping up to one, learn the code base in Stax Core, which is enormous, and like basically only Jude and Aaron can carry all of it in their heads. And then not knowing Rust and learning Rust, the first couple months I had working in core were intense. Yeah, they were very intense. But again, it's like the special forces boot camp, you know, like you come out significantly stronger on the other side.
Yeah, I remember seeing your tweets about, like, I could see you learning Rust in real time because you're like, bar checker got hands. And
Yes.
it's like, I hear that a lot. And like, I'm such a newbie that, like, I kind of understand, like loop mechanical functions and stuff, but like, I don't really know JavaScript that well. So when I started dabbling in Rust, I'm like, yeah, it's telling me I'm throwing an error, but I just kind of fix the error. But for a JavaScript person, it's like, there's an error. Like, what are you telling me I'm doing wrong? And it just gets mad. But the more you use it, especially for smart contract and like node stuff, it sounds like people realize that Rust is a big feature for it, even though it's annoying because it makes
Yeah.
everything safer down the line.
It does. It makes everything safer and faster. And like, again, I'm definitely I'm self-taught, so I started learning JavaScript and languages that you don't really have to learn types that strongly, let alone memory management. And so the more I've the like the lower I've gotten in programming languages to like, I mean, script is basically assembly, right? So like I've now understood, I've had to understand like how assembly works. The lower you go on the stack, yeah, the more concepts you're gonna get thrown your way. And Rust is a really good attempt at low level languages like C.
Interesting. Yeah, it's funny too, because that's probably one of the differences between going to a 4-year college getting a CS degree, because you'll quickly be introduced to lower level stuff like memory. But if you're just a self-taught guy, you're like, I have something I want to build, and I'm going to go build it. And it's only in the service of that goal. All the other stuff is periphery until I have to figure it out. Yep. Okay.
Which
Very cool.
again, like has there's pros and cons to learning that way, right? Yeah, unfortunately, a pro is you also have to learn how to sell what you're building or like your experiences, or else people will discount it, you know? So that's really, I feel like something people don't consider enough as well, is you can be self-taught, but you also better know how to tell your story and explain why you deserve to be here or show why you deserve to be here.
Yep, that's a good point. That's a good point. Have a good portfolio, and a lot of it's your energy. Like, do you have a certain swagger or confidence that says, I know what I'm doing, versus a strong paper resume? Good point. Okay, last question, super broad, but like, given how you're all over the place in the ecosystem, what are you most excited about in Bitcoin? Anywhere, in layers and rollups and anything. What's got you hyped? And it could be something you're building or not.
As corny as this is, I'm hyped to see the developer energy come back. That, and I'm happy to be part of that, right? Because I would say, again, when I first came across Bitcoin in like 13 or 14, and then Ethereum, I remember at that point, like kind of just like seeing someone like Vitalik say, "Hey, you actually can't do anything on Bitcoin. Like, come build on what I'm building." You know, you look in the mirror and you're like, all right, I know I'm not as smart as Vitalik. So if that dude can't figure it out, then like, no chance I can. And so I would say that the fact that like years later, we kind of realize that that is wrong and that we actually can compete for developer mind share. We can compete for, building protocols on top of Bitcoin. That's been really energizing for me.
That's a good, that's
The
actually a good one.
development energy and the intellectual energy coming into Bitcoin is what excites me.
Yeah, it's interesting because being in Stacks, we were Bitcoin adjacent, which was like a contrarian bet on we are Bitcoiners, we self-prescribed, but we wouldn't accept as such. And now it's still kind of, I would say it's still kind of contrarian to say that Bitcoin can do all things. A good chunk of crypto still thinks they can compete and like are going to be the settlement layer of the internet, whether it's Solana or Ethereum. But Bitcoiners believe that's going to be Bitcoin. It's going to be the gravity's going to be all here, and L2s are going to be all the attention with like some very specific use cases. So I agree with you. Like it's still kind of contrarian, even though the money's flowing in more now and devs are coming. It still feels very early. We're on like the beginning of that curve right now.
I fully agree with that, and like you're saying, we still have billions of people to like to onboard, thousands of developers to onboard. There's still a significant amount of work to be done, and it's that I would say that's kind of funny. Where like I would say the more cycles you've been in Bitcoin, I think counterintuitively, the first or second you think you're late to the party, and it doesn't sink in until a couple cycles later where you're like, no, everyone's still left. It's super behind. There's a lot of work to be done. And yeah, I feel like it's been a year of that, basically.
Totally agree. Right, I think that's a good place to wrap it. Jesus, always good to see you, my man.
You too, my brother. I appreciate you. I appreciate everything you do for the ecosystem.
Thank you. Likewise, likewise. All right.
Thank you for listening this far into the episode. If you found it enjoyable, please do like, subscribe on whatever platform that you're listening on. YouTube does me a huge favor to like and subscribe. Find me on Twitter at JakeBlockTrade. Show me some love. I reply to every DM. And if you are a Bitcoin builder that is kind of at the forefront of building new use cases, whether it's L1, Lightning, Stacks, Rootstock, Rollups, Ordinals, BRC20, I want to talk to you. So when I'm not doing this podcast, I am the sourcing partner at the Bitcoin Frontier Fund, where we invest in Bitcoin startups at the earliest stages, give you access to whatever you need, whether it's legal, product, fundraising help, as well as capital. So love to talk to you. You can hit me up again. Find me on Twitter at JakeBlockchain and shoot me a DM. I'll read everything. Love to talk to you guys. All right, peace.
It's gone up. We playing the long game to the black rock chains with the rocks paid off from the blockchain. Going up high octane, so we up in here like Pomade. Making big noise, big money, go play with your kid toys. You funny, I'm counting my Bitcoin. We up and we been gone. It's gone up. Planned it out and we did this purposefully. Panning out like the kitchen currently. It's like surgery. Way it's earning me. A nurse's salary for cryptocurrency. I'm on a vacay drinking coconuts while wearing polka dots. This ain't no hocus pocus. Listen up and learn. It's gone up.